was I feel quite privileged being able to speak today in this forum, because I quite often speak at the corporate kind of events and stuff like that to leaders and in government agencies, etc. But it's about leadership, it's about influence and making a difference, but this is about the heart. This is about people's emotions and what really means the most to them. So this is, very exciting, I think, for me to be part of this. So thank you. Okay, so I'm wondering who is here because they have people in their family who are gay and lesbian? Okay. Who's from the GLBT community who's interested in this topic? Who's here because this is a really cool place to be right now? There's interesting information. Everyone, okay. All right, good. I actually recently I haven't worn this shirt for about 6 months and I put on 3 kilos, and it's a major coincidence because it seems to have shrunk at the same time. It's really bizarre. So I hope you don't mind my blue face. Okay. There's so much to talk about in such a small amount of time, but I thought I'd sort of narrow it down, but just give you a bit of context in terms of myself. I'm a psychologist. I've been working for many, many years in the GLBT community in Melbourne and in Queensland for about 7 years. And have recently changed the name of the business because it's now Centre for Human Potential, which means that now we're getting psychologists who are also very good at coaching. So people come in and they're dealt with their sort of, emotional issues, and then they're going to deal with, what can I get out of life kind of thing. So we're sort of making some huge shifts there. So that's basically what I do. I'm a principal psychologist, which means I don't do as much of the one-on-one stuff anymore. But one of my jobs is to get people involved in the business who have the same heart, like who really care and who really want to make a difference in people's lives. They're not there because they want to feel good as a professional or whatever. They're there actually for a very good reason. So that's a bit about me professionally. A huge reason for my passion in this area is because I'm gay myself and growing up in a very fundamentalist Christian family, and issues that were I could spend days talking about, which I don't have time to go into right now, obviously. And so I thought I'd just give you a very brief kind of overview about where I come from in terms of my family situation. I was about to come out in my early 20s, and then my dad actually beat me to it, which wasn't a great look for me at the time. So mum was busily having a nervous breakdown and getting into all sorts of medications. So I thought, better go back in again, which I did. Then I came out again. That revolving door had smoke coming off it. And then eventually I came back and I thought, there's a group called Exodus, which is a group that you can change. You don't have to be gay. How cool. I can actually be straight. And as for some reason happens to me, I actually started leading it for 2 years, which is another story for another time. and as you can see, it was very successful. Not. it was a great group, though, because a number of my close friends actually met their partners in this group. So, okay, so in terms of... that's just a little bit about my background. So, and one of the things I found in that was certainly I became very close to a lot of people who had that internal conflict between what they've been brought up to believe is right and what they actually are. And it's a bit like getting a whole group of white people together trying to become black. You can be praying, you can be counselled, you can do anything, and we're still going to be white. So it's the same stuff. Do you mind if someone give me some water? Thanks. Okay, so there was a very good book that I'd recommend. Has anyone heard of Inside Out by Erin Schale? You have? Oh, good, okay. Yep. This is a very touching story, which I think goes to the heart of what we're talking about. Thank you. Which is really about this woman that rang me up out of the blue, a careers teacher, who said that she was very upset because someone who she was really close to, a student of hers, was in hospital and was dying because he tried to kill himself. And she was very upset about this and was holding his hand and said to her, look, it's the last thing I do. I'm going to make sure I make a difference, even if it's just a little dent. And that's what inspired her to write that book. And given where she was coming from in terms of her passion, I decided absolutely I'll write a little chapter in there. So this is... it's really dated, and thank God they haven't got a photo of me back then. But anyway, it's an older book, but I think it's still in print. Does anyone know if it's still in print? Yeah. Mm. Great. One of the other books I think really helped me as a Christian, I'm no longer a Christian, but when I was a Christian, fundamentalist one, to add to it, there's a fantastic book called Living in Sin. Has anyone heard of the Living in Sin book? Spong? What a name, but what a book. Okay. That really helped me a lot. Bishop Spong, if you want to write that down, if you have anyone who's interested in the theology of that. Okay, so lots and lots of stuff I could talk about. In terms of my personal life, I have co-parented with a lesbian mum, a child for about, who was a little kid, who's now 21. He has his own son now, who's now 1 year old, and he has a lovely partner, and this massive Sri Lankan family that, you know, just I think they fill up one whole suburb. And so the joys of being gay and lesbian is you can create your own loving family that's based on love and the laws of attraction, all that sort of stuff, and rather than having to, you know, only stick with your biological family. And again, I could speak all day about these things, which I won't. Okay. Now, the main thing that that I was asked to talk about was to do with families and what to expect, you know, with your gay and lesbian child coming out, or if someone's a bit older, if they're coming out. Now, I think it's really easy to have an intellectual understanding of what it's like to come out and what it's like to be gay and lesbian and all that sort of stuff. But it's often difficult to get that emotional empathy. You know, it's really hard to actually really get your feet into their shoes. So what I'm going to do is just do a very brief kind of exercise with you. It's not star jumps or anything. It's actually an exercise where I'm going to get you to close your eyes. And as we're going to be doing this, and I'll guide you through it, it's only a couple of minutes, and I'll be asking you to imagine a couple of things. Now, if you get into something that's really painful, don't go there. We just want you to feel a little bit of emotion, not a lot. Okay, so and so what I'm going to ask you to do, and this is really about getting in touch with what it's like to be growing up gay and lesbian for a lot of people, not for everyone, but for certainly a lot of people. So what I'm going to do is everyone, if they could close their eyes. This is not a trust exercise where I leap upon you or anything, so don't worry. Okay, now what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to go back to a time, allow your mind to come up with a memory of when you felt rejected by one of your parents. And just put your hand up and put it down again if you can remember that, and just sense the emotion. Don't have to touch the emotion. Okay. Yep. Okay. All right. Now, I'd like you to all now remember a time where you felt the most excluded by your peers at school, and just to sense that emotion, rather than touching in on it, but just sense it. Okay. Anyone not connect to that? Put up your hand. Okay, there are a few people. Okay, most people can. Okay, that's fine. Thanks. So if you can open your eyes. Now, you can actually imagine that same couple of those feelings that you had just then. And if you were to exaggerate, like turn up the volume 1,000 times for a kid that's 13, 14, 15, with the capacity to deal with emotions, which is incredibly low, that's the sort of thing that's happening for someone who's in their adolescence trying to come out. It's for a lot of kids an extremely painful and difficult time. But of course, kids, you know, they're invincible. They're fine. They'll hide in their room and they'll play really embarrassing music, or they'll do something and pretend everything's fine when it's not. But in fact, that's the sort of thing that often will happen. One of the problems with that is that there's a thing called, you know, psychologists make these really complicated names to make ourselves feel really exclusive and important. But it's actually, they call them schemas, which is like really core beliefs. So it's really about, you know, the experiences we have when we're really young form the framework in which we then live the rest of our lives. And that actually creates certain ways of thinking, patterns of thinking, and certain beliefs about yourself and beliefs about the world and about other people. Now, with a lot of gay and lesbian kids, they've been brought up feeling like, pretending that they're part of the group, but actually feeling like they're quite sort of separate. They're over here looking at the group but pretending. And the same, you know, they want to be, you know, they want to be the best son for their dad and get into all the things that dad wants to do. Maybe they don't want to do that, but they pretend. So again, they feel kind of excluded. They also feel defective. Not everybody, but a lot of kids growing up gay and lesbian actually feel there's something wrong with them. Because what's the worst thing to be called in school? You're gay. You know, it's a real sort of put down. If you know that you're becoming attracted to the same sex, and everybody's putting gay or lesbian people down, you get this feeling there's something really wrong with you. Now, intellectually, people come to terms with this pretty quickly, I find. But what happens is there can be a residual kind of underlying belief or damage that's done that actually affects them for the rest of their lives if they don't actually recognize that. So I just thought that was an important thing to look at. So rather than just having intellectual empathy, to actually get a little bit more in touch with the emotional side. Just a brief aside in terms of time, can someone just give me like a, because I'm not quite sure how long to go for, just put your hand up when there's about 5 minutes to go. Thank you very much. Okay. All right. So I had found this presentation in my drafts folder of my email box the other night. So this is why you've got these as opposed to that. But this is just as fine, but just to let you know why there's nothing, you know, groovy up there at the stage. But it's all down here anyway. Okay, so I thought it'd be good to talk a little bit about some of the reactions that, you know, when normal adolescents, they want to individuate, they want to be different, so they become quite dramatic and overcompensate and do all sorts of things when they're just being teenagers. But you can imagine teenagers going through all the stuff we just spoke about and how much more pain and everything else they're going through. So sometimes what happens is that they will become a little bit exaggerated. They've finally found their community, they finally feel, you know, this is the way they are. And if you go to the Beat nightclub on a Friday, Saturday night, there are lots of young guys there with lots of makeup and lots of massive hair. I don't know how they see out of that, but I can't talk, I was in the 80s. But and there's this sort of now, this sort of movement in that sort of scene and the emo thing and whatever, which is about that sort of a bit more effeminate kind of look, and which is kind of fun and whatever. But I think as parents, you can get so protective about your kid that you can kind of really catastrophize that kind of stuff. So if you see those sorts of things happening, and again, we don't want to stereotype, like not everybody wants to have emo hair and, you know, put on makeup and stuff. But, you know, for those that do, it's just that's what happens. And so that's, I think, an important thing. Now, in terms of a couple of examples from the counselling room, again, to get a little bit more of a deeper insight, you'll never know who these people are, so I'm not sort of breaching confidentiality. This is a good example of what happens. There's a mum who came in with her son, and the son was naturally extremely effeminate. So he was basically lamb to the slaughter at school because he was really camp, like full on. But he wasn't putting it on. He wasn't sort of, you know, overcompensating or being aggressive about it. It's just that's what he was. That's who he was. And the mum loved her son so much and this fantastic relationship, but it was being torn apart. So they both came in. Dad didn't really connect to his son anymore. Which is really sad, and he came with his mum, and what we found was that they weren't listening to each other anymore. Like, she was just trying to love her son and trying to protect him from all the trauma and the pain that life can dish out to anyone who's different. And this kid was just being himself and felt that he was being, you know, kind of, in a way, suffocated by mum. So basically, all I did was to get them to listen to each other, which is basically to park their emotions to one side and to forget how angry and upset and, you know, anxious and everything else she was, and just listen and say, okay, so what you're saying to me is this, that, and the other. Is that right? Yes. So when I do this, this is how you feel? Yes. Okay, I didn't realise that. And then he had to do the same thing back, and it killed them at the time. They're like, they wanted to say how they felt, but they just had to pause that. And that made an enormous difference. And because the practice that we have is mainly for gay and lesbians and their families and friends, we've seen endless examples of this exact thing where it's just about getting people in a room with a neutral party to just get people to park their own emotional responses. And again, it's about empathy. It's about really knowing what it feels like to be that other person. You may still disagree with what they're doing and whatever, which is fine. You can say that, and parents need to be very clear about what they believe and what they don't believe. Without any guidelines, kids sort of feel like they're not really cared for, even though they hate it. So I've got many examples of that, but and a lot of parents come in without their kid who are just basically feeling really guilty, and they don't want to feel guilty, and they're like, well, I know that I haven't done anything wrong. I know that in my head, but sometimes I lay awake at night feeling, oh God, maybe I didn't do this, or maybe it was like I was overprotective, or maybe as a father I didn't play footy when he was two or something. And so one of the great things about that, and we are very lucky because we get to see people in their raw state. You know, everyone smiles and intellectually, you know, understands everything, but underneath it all we get to feel what they're really feeling, and that's a wonderful place to be, because then once people connect to what they're really feeling, they get to be able to challenge it. But if you have deep, and we'll talk about this in a minute, very deeply held beliefs that you don't actually know are there, they guide your behavior and feelings. So does that kind of make sense? Yeah, okay, great. All right. Now, as you see, the conclusion is actually not really meant to be there. So let's turn the page before you see that. Thank you very much. Okay. What to expect from your child? We've talked a lot about that. And what I thought we could do is just to, for one really important thing would be to have a think about homophobia and what's called internalized homophobia. You know, some of the most homophobic people I've met are actually gay and lesbian people in our community who, will, when there's a good relationship, they go, oh, that'll never last, you know, or they'll say, you know, they basically, we've been, all been downloaded with so much crap over the years since we were little kids about what it's like to be gay and lesbian. And we all of us at some level have that deep inside of us. You know, I get a really huge dyke dressed in men's clothes and you can hardly tell if it's a man or woman, come in with this really serious look at her face and sits on the thing and I think, okay, here we go, man. And I think, oh, hang on, what am I thinking? And I've got this beautiful woman who opens up and shares some of the most gentle and powerful moments of her emotional life with me. And suddenly all of my stereotypes about what dykes are suddenly fly out the window. And I've been doing this for years. Or I get a guy who's in his 60s dressed in leather come, you know, sort of mincing up the thing to me and I'm like, okay, this is very are you being served, but that's fine. And I've got all of these assumptions in my head still to this day because I've been taught this stuff since I was a little kid and it's still there. So it's really important to feel that it's okay to have those beliefs, but it's really important to identify them and challenge them because they will guide how you treat and respond and feel and behave to anyone who you know who's going through a difficult time or is coming out as gay and lesbian or any of those sorts of things. Okay, someone kindly gave me the 2 minutes thing. Okay, so there's a huge amount more we can say, but basically having, just in terms of the conclusion at the moment, it really is about intense understanding, really deep understanding of who it is that you're sitting in front of. And it's about really, once you identify those unhealthy, negative, irrational beliefs and you can challenge those, it then allows the space for real love. You know, you can actually then start to feel love. And when the other person feels understood, even if you don't agree with them and you think, oh, what are you doing out there in the clubs and blah, 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 and you get all that sort of noise happening, once you just put your emotions aside and you're sitting there and you're really, really listening to who you're in front of, the person that you love and your family the most, who you at times push away because of all this noise, once you really learn to listen and you identify those beliefs and put them to one side, that creates the most amazing space for love. Which is, you know, one of the most powerful human drivers we know of. So I think that's the most powerful thing. And also, obviously, I don't really want to add, but the gentleman before us talking about family and obviously we're very lucky in terms of as a community we can create the most wonderful, beautiful, extended families that you can know of. So we're very lucky. Now, you'll find at the very back of that, I've also given you a couple of forms. One of them is there's this particular, I think it might be good to talk about intellectual stuff. Now, you don't want to plot your son or daughter on this thing, but there's 6 stages, Vivian Cass. I didn't want to talk about theory today, but there's a little bit of information on that. That's quite useful. She's a woman who lives in Perth, psychologist, very useful stuff. It's not linear. People don't get stages 1, 3, 2, 3, 4. There have been some criticisms of it, but it can help to understand where someone's going through. Thank you.